Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Hello, I would tell you it's an exciting day for the Urban Sports Scene, but we haven't had a show in the last couple of weeks due to the fact one of my best friends in life passed away about 2 weeks ago. Big Ron, a.k.a. Mega, one of the dudes who always supported the show, called in, or even, you know, was very active on our Facebook page. It's been tough for myself. I'm Wally. It's been tough for myself over the last, I won't lie, the couple of weeks I've been depressed and whatnot, just been confused. But, you know, grace of God and grace of good friends, had the opportunity, you know, share stories about Ron, and it's been hard, but it's been, you know, it's always cool to remember somebody who has been such a positive influence in my life. So, Ron, this show is dedicated to you.
What's going on, big homie? How you doing, man?
Man, it's a process. Everything's a process in life, man. You know, my whole thing is at the moment, and even in life, try to remember the good. Know we're all blessed. And again, you know, trying to remember. I mean, not trying to always, you know, put forth out there and inform people. And I got the platform to do it, to inform people about how cool this dude was, man. You know, I had an opportunity to go to his funeral. I mean, I was, you know, I asked to go to his funeral. I asked to speak, and I got to tell people, you know what I mean, how great this dude was, and not just me. A lot of folks went to school with us and whatnot, partaked in this. So again, you know, it was tough, but it was good to to talk about Ron and talk about the influences he had, not just in my life, but in many people's lives. The reason why, like I tell folks before, the reason why Ron's so important to me as a friend, as an individual who supported everything I did. Again, I mentioned the Urban Sports Scene, but even some of y'all may not know this, but you may know this. I'm a part of a business entity called This Date Is Over, and Ron is an individual who's always been, he's been at most of my events. And if he couldn't make it, you know, it's because he was taking care of his kid, his loving kid, his lovely kid, and actually he's expecting another one. So Ron's going to have another child. So which is a blessing, you know. So my job, I feel like my job and many other individuals within our, you know, people I hang out with, our job is to make sure we tell his kids how great a dude he was. So, and to me is so. But all in all, everything is a process, trying to enjoy life. You know, again, we all are. Don't forget to tell your loved ones and your friends that you love them and you hope the best for them. Also, RIP to my homie Barry, who passed away during the same time. That was tough as well. And that's my dude. So make sure you have a prayer out to my homie Rodney, who was his cousin. Shout out a prayer to him. Shout out a prayer to Ron's family. Again, like I said before, this show is dedicated to my homie Ron. Dude, I love you. You're like a brother to me. So,
Usually I would come in and say, let's get into our tradition, the pregame. But we're going to switch it up this time because this show, we're dedicating it to Ron and his family and his memory. We're going to have some comments from Ron for right now to bring us in on the pregame. So, yeah. Wally, drop that. Shh.
You saved me. I appreciate the call, man. So, what are you calling in for?
You talking about free agents, Ariza, Cortot?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah, real, go ahead.
DC Rising.
You know I hate that term, DC Rising.
I know.
That term is so dumb to me, DC Rising. It's just like I believe in U.S., you know, I believe the World Cup talk.
I'm with you with the World Cup.
You know what I mean?
They might as well just call me a communist.
Yeah, call me whatever you want to call me. Call me a sellout, man. Whatever. Yeah. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Everybody's loving this, but we all know USA is not ready for the World Cup.
Exactly. But my whole thing is about the folks who, you know, that, you know, been around the way. And when I mean around the way, it's folks who play ball or walk in the streets, whatever, are now, like, chanting USA soccer, and they know nothing about soccer. Like, that is amazing to me.
I mean, the only thing these people know about soccer is playing kickball back in elementary school.
There you go. I mean, there you go, son. There you go.
Or playing basketball with a soccer ball.
Exactly. You know what I mean? But go ahead, man. Go ahead. My bad.
With the Wizards, I mean, like you said, Jeff Green. Yeah, Jeff Green is a better 4 than 3.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, Wizards still have Otto Porter.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Glenn Rice Jr., who's I'm high on. Because okay. he's a straight scorer.
Yeah.
I love Gordon Hayward, but I think he's gonna cost too much money.
You think so? You think so?
Yeah. Because
how much is too much?
Well, I'm reading that teams are willing to offer him a max deal or close to the max.
Yeah.
Utah, you know, Phoenix Suns, they just have money to waste. Houston has money to waste. But, I mean, to me, I want the Wizards to be smart about it.
Yeah.
Because in 2 years, you have to give Bill. You have to give Bill a max contract.
Exactly.
Then, like you said, Durant is available. If he wants to come home, then we can have the money available.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, if you get Jeff Green, I think Jeff Green has probably about 2, maybe 3 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
But he'll definitely have to be a four. He could be a four coming off the bench.
Oh, I'm coming off the bench. Okay, so this is my thing.
I haven't come off the bench with the second unit.
Yeah.
You put him at the four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you run with Gortat. You might walk. You might go with a John Wall or a Bradley Beal or a John Wall and Glenn Rice Jr. and Otto Porter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can mix it up. And but like I said, I would like the four reason to come back, but like the price has to be right.
Yeah, to me, it's like this. He's coming off a contract season. So, of course, he's going to have his best season. And if we look at Trevor Ariza for what it is, he's not a guy who's creating this, who can create his own shot. He's a guy who's basically a set shooter. So, John Wall made his life easy. He can defend. That's a given. Trevor Ariza is a good defender. But in the grand scheme of things, he's a top defender. But that's about it to me. His shooting, this is his best shooting season. It's not like this has been consistent. This is his best shooting season. He's a good player when he can score decent points when he's playing with a good point guard. He played well with Chris Paul. He's playing good with John Wall.
Yeah, I mean, I would give him more credit than that.
What can he do other than shoot the ball? I mean, other than shoot set threes and play the game?
I mean, he can shoot, play D, and I mean, he became a leader this year.
A leader.
There's a big difference between Ariza this year and the past two seasons as a Wizard. I mean, mm-hmm. His game has improved, especially with the shot.
Yeah.
He can shoot the set shot. He can shoot off the dribble.
Can he shoot the dribble? Can he really shoot off the dribble? His off the dribble shot is not that good. He has to get.
But he can make it. All, well, this year he made it off the dribble.
He's like Mario.
He's a lot more aggressive.
He's like Mario Ellie. Like you remember
he's
Mario
a lot
Ellie.
More aggressive.
You remember Mario Ellie. That's who he reminds me of. Wow. He reminds me of Mario Ellie. He has to have his feet right and shoot the ball. What shot off the dribble?
He's not that slow. Mario
he's
Ellie
pretty
was
slow.
With his,
his shot is pretty.
That whole Houston Rockets team was slow with that shot.
That was, but he's pretty.
They had
slow.
So much time to shoot. Kenny Smith was the same way. They could look at their feet, set their feet, bend their knees, and shoot the ball. That's the most time they had to shoot the ball. Because they was playing with the Dream.
Of course. I mean, that's playing with a Nigerian killer. We Nigerian folks are like that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
But I'm like, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, if they don't sign Ariza, it's not the end of the world. Because they have Porter. They have a Glenn Rice Jr. And, I mean, there's cheap options out there. There's veteran leadership out there. Sean Marion is out there.
Sean Marion's still out there? Wow. He should call it quits.
What I would like to do.
He should call it quits.
I would like to go get Ed Davis from Memphis.
That's not a bad pick.
Have him be a backup forward to Nene.
Yeah, because we all know Nene's not going to last. We know that for a fact.
Yeah, because eventually, and maybe even trade Nene. If you get another starter,
mm-hmm.
If you get a starter in a first round pick Nene,
you would trade Nene for what?
I would trade him.
For what? If you get another starter, so you're talking about like an Ed Davis, you would trade Nene. See, this is the thing. I like your Jeff Green thing. Your Jeff Green thing. It's not being biased. I'm a Hoya fan, but the reason why I like it is just that, you know, I think Jeff Green at the four could be effective with the Wizards with this team. Jeff Green at the four, and whoever you're going to play at the three, you can still play Martell Webster. I think Martell Webster is a guy who can defend and he can shoot the three ball. I think he had an off season last year, but historically speaking, Martell Webster is more of a consistent 3-point shooter than Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza is a better defender, but Martell Webster in his own right. You let Trevor Ariza walk. You can trade Nene. You lose more money on your cap. You trade Nene. Bring a Jeff Green who's paid. I think Nene makes more than Jeff Green, if my memory serves me correctly.
Nene makes money, but my thing with trading Nene is that sometimes you have to sell high.
Yeah.
Because you know Nene is not going to play another full season next year.
Never.
But he has 2 more years on his contract.
Yeah.
So you probably get in 2 years, 83, you're between 60 and 80 games.
Yeah.
in 2 years. So my thing is, go ahead, sell high, get a first round pick, get some more, you know, get good play, two good players, and keep that cap room. I'm looking at the list now of free agents. This is a quick one. Like I like the guy Bazemore, who I mean Lakers, but from the 2 or 3, he's a nice, you know, he can make his own shot.
Yeah, Bazemore can create his own shot.
Yeah, my thing is that this free agent list is it's filled with talent.
Yeah.
You just got to find the right pieces to fit your system.
Again, it goes back to, you know, maybe playing your own. You got auto, like, this is the thing about trying out all for this team. Probably, this is why, you know, I say, I mean, let Ariza go, move away, have Otto Porter be your backup. Because if Otto Porter looks good, now you have him on the bargain because, first, he's a lottery pick. He's not paid but that much money. He's still on his rookie deal. Right. So if Otto Porter looks good, now you can, and he lost that money. And if Otto Porter is just a player who's real, who's good for you, who's a good role player, you know, for 2 years, you still have that chance and opportunity to say, okay, I can target Kevin Durant. Like, that's there. You know what I mean?
I'm not big on that. I guess what Houston is doing and what Phoenix.
What they doing? What do you explain?
Cleveland. It's like they're big all stars. Let's clear space. So in case a LeBron or a Kevin Love or a Carmelo could join our team, I hate that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either.
To me, you're not playing basketball.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not a fan of that. No, believe me, I'm not a fan of that. At all, but I think that we're talking about Trevor Ariza. So in all honesty, it's not like he's not that valuable to me. He's a good defender. I think Martell Webster position is just as a Trevor Ariza. That's just my opinion. So to me,
he's valuable.
Yeah.
But we have done a great job of replacing Ariza.
Yeah.
So it's not a necessity to have him back.
Yeah. Now
would love to have him back. But for the right price.
Exactly. And it's a chemistry thing, obviously. You know, you let Trevor, John Wall isn't going to be happy because John Wall is a fan of Trevor Ariza. And he's the face of your franchise at the moment.
So John Wall take a pay.
I agree. I'm with you on that. But, again, for the best to me, for the best outcome money-wise and also for the team, you play Webster, you're not really losing that much. Then you have Otto Porter as backup. You need to play Otto Porter. All right, it's a third pick. Right, you need to play him. So, re-signing Trevor Ariza, to me, if you re-sign, that does happen. You trade Otto Porter, like you have to, because that thing looks
on. Nah, you keep him.
But sit there on the bench to play what position? Because Webster is the second off the bench on a three position.
Hey, Webster played the two. I mean, I think it's the same thing with the Nationals.
Go ahead.
You keep your talent because so many players are injury prone.
Yeah.
You don't get rid of anyone. You know, like Ariza.
Mm-hmm.
Ariza was healthy this year. Usually he's not.
Yeah, that's true.
You still don't know about Bill was healthy for most of the year. But he has little knick-knack injuries.
Mm-hmm.
He still has Nene.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either way, a lot of times this year, especially when Nene was out for those, played a lot of, they went small and put Ariza at the four.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. I mean, it can happen.
Yeah, you know, so.
It can happen.
So, I mean, Porter could. You could actually steal minutes for Porter at the four.
You could do. He didn't.
Yeah, I would still keep. Even though Ariza come back, I would still keep Porter unless somebody just gives me a ridiculous offer. Then he's gone. But I would keep him.
Yeah, that was the great Mega Ron, man. That was the great Mega Ron, man. Ron, RIP, man. You will be missed. Again, man. Nothing. No words coming out of my mouth can even express the what you mean to me, man, as a homie and as a brother. Again, man, RIP, stay blessed. And again, we'll have we started off a fund for Ron and his kids, his family, excuse me, which include his kids. So check out our website. I'm sure I give this information to many people. So we're about to go to commercial break. So we'll get at y'all when we get back.
Blow up last season. Every win. Every loss. Every headline. Blow it all up. 'Cause all that matters is what you do next. We'll be right back.
what? This song has grown up, has grown on me.
I can really see that.
Like, but there's no creativity into it, though.
It's not a, none at all. Like, there's not a creativity in a lot of music.
It's not even a. It's like not even a real rap song. It's like it's not even a rap song. I mean, that's the remix, so it's Juicy J in it. So that one is actually
Juicy J, 2 Chainz, and someone else. Don't give me a line.
Is it French Montana?
Might be French Montana, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, you heard the RG3 commercial before that. Obviously, that's a commercial played off of the year before when he tore his ACL. I played that commercial because we still have questions about RG3. Even though he's all in it, we still have questions about his play. But before we get into the Washington Redskins, you can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. One day. This hasn't happened of late. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. We have our phone lines open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. If you have anything to say about the Washington Redskins, and also if you are listening and you know Ron, call in and give us a Ron story. It would always be cool, man. Just a shout out the story. And again, let me mention that website I mentioned earlier before the break about the Fun for Ron's kids and family. The site is www.gofundme.com/CBT730. That's /CBT730. Any donation is key. I don't care what it is. Nothing's too small. Again, so let's go into the Washington Redskins. I mentioned RG3. There have been talks about his play in training camp. We don't get into that, but I want to go into the first preseason game itself. Obviously, we haven't been on for a while, but they played the Patriots. Did you watch the game?
Of course not.
Of course not.
Of course, it's the first week of preseason. I mean, I saw highlights from it.
All right, from the highlights, what's some of the things that stuck out to you?
Some of the things that stuck out to me is the Redskins are going to have a hell of a running game this year with Alfred Morris, Ray Helu Jr. Then you also have Seastrom, then, you know, Reed. So they're going to have an interesting time trying to cut down at the running back position. So I think that's probably a position of strength and depth right there. Looking at it, the first team offensive line really didn't, you know, you could still tell there's some patches, that some work that needs to be done there.
They look okay to me. They look good. Okay. They look good to me.
Oh, well.
I mean, go ahead. Continue.
No, go ahead.
Let me go ahead. I watched the entire game. So I'll say this much. The running game looked great. It was very impressive. Just everybody looked good in terms of running backs. Everybody looked good. It wasn't a guy who looked bad, to be honest with you. Thompson, even though they want to hype him up, Thompson, to me, looked the worst out of all of them. I liked how Alfred Morris played. I like how Roy Helu played. I even like how Evan Royster played, but I don't think Evan Royster is going to make the team. Cyrus Redd looked good. Seastrom looked explosive, but though you hear reports out of camp that he can't catch or pass protect, so he's still a project. So I'm interested to see if he can even get on this team. Obviously, you putting him on the practice squad, I think he's still in danger to not being your team. You put him on the practice squad, he probably won't even make. He'll probably be picked up. But at the same time, the running game was good. So I totally agree with you. Kirk Cousins looked good. He's very decisive. He saw one read and went for it.
Well, I saw parts of the game. I'm not gonna say I saw all of it, but I did get to see Colt McCoy. I did get to see Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy looked good, even though he was in against the third string and it's the first preseason game. And we all know a lot of those guys who he was competing against or playing against that played for the Patriots will have some other occupation come this fall. So, overall net, a lot of, you know, just from a lot of what I heard and what I saw, Kirk Cousins and Colt McCoy looked excellent going against the second and third string. Robert Griffin, the third, he looked like he had that explosiveness back about him. His ability to move in the pocket, he moved in the pocket better than he did.
To me, I didn't – You ain't seen enough of RG3. I'm really still the jury's out with RG3 in terms of the first game. The passes, I guess he checked down, so I guess that's an improvement compared to last season. But you would like to see him throw to his wide receivers, Revis and I think Browner was playing. Was Browner playing? Browner was playing. I'm sorry, Browner was playing. Revis wasn't playing, so I would have loved to see RG3 try to throw the ball to a wide receiver. Maybe it wasn't in the cards. Maybe they wanted him to work on checkdowns. Kirk Cousins like. Playing and he was ready to throw. They ran the ball out RG3 in the game. But Kirk Cousins, they just came out throwing. That was just the plan. Boom. You could tell we're going to throw. So it made me think, like, this dude really ready to be a pocket passer or a passer, period. Or maybe they're just trying to hold off, not to show the league anything. But
Well, that's what he wants to be.
Yeah, that's what he wants to be.
That's what he wants to be. That's what he says he is.
Yeah, no. And this is what, and also I'm excited too in a way at the defense. Arakpo and Kerrigan look like monsters. Again, you're going against the Patriots. The first team defense was going against the Patriots patchwork offense. Most of those guys won't start, but I like the way the defense. I like the way the defense play. And I said this before. Mekhi Rambo looked good to me in that game. I know a lot of people don't like the kid, but he looked good. He was flying in the opponent's backfield. He was a good run stopper for a safety, and I was happy with it. Everybody was worried about the new middle line, inside linebacker. And good God, I have him.
Keenan Robinson.
Yeah, Keenan Robinson. Sorry, thank you. Keenan looked fast. He looked quick, and that's good. That's good compared to what we had.
Yeah, I think you can never replace the leadership and football IQ that London Fletcher had. But one thing that Keenan Robinson clearly, just from looking at him, possessed over London Fletcher is speed and quickness. So he brings that to the middle linebacker position.
So I mean, all in all, I'm happy. Somebody called me. I wasn't sure if it was for the show or just personal. if that was a personal call, I can't pick it up. But I'm not gonna put the person out there. But if you were calling for the show, yeah, you can call and I'll definitely put you.
That's the way to do it.
I wasn't sure for a fact, but in that game, I was happy with what the Redskins. The defense. I wanted to see how they would play on the defensive side of the ball. So. Hopefully, we'll get a better indication of what's going on with the Redskins defense in the second game. But
that second game is going to be the highest rated preseason game ever in NFL.
But I mentioned history. That's true. But I mentioned we'll get to that too. But I mentioned Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, how he looked in the game against the Patriots during the scrimmage. During practice, the Redskins were practicing with the Patriots. A bunch of players from the Patriots. This is unknown individuals. Reporters too.
And players have stated that Kirk Cousins looked like the best quarterback for that team. Look for the Washington football team.
Yeah. And in practice.
He looked like the better passer. And I think everyone knows that Kirk Cousins, because Kirk Cousins, he came up in a traditional pro-style offense in college. And also, he's more prepared at this point to be a pocket passer than Robert Griffin III.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one that's going to debate that.
What did I say? Kirk, pocket quarterback than RG3. Pocket passer than RG3. That's a fact. I agree with you. You know what I mean? But RG3 is the more accomplished winner.
Absolutely.
All right, and he is the playmaker. He's a superstar. So, just because, Kirk Cousins is a better pocket passer. That's a better pocket passer than RG3. There are a lot of quarterbacks who are better pocket passing than RG3 at the moment.
Yeah, and by pocket passer, we don't mean that he has a better arm than Robert Griffin III. No, I mean for a guy to get up to the line, pre-snap, to go with the ball, know how to make his progression, make his read through his progressions. That's what we mean as a pocket passer at this point. And Kirk Cousins clearly is that at this point.
So that's my thing. It's like he's a better pocket passer. That's a fact. Is he a better player? That's a whole different argument.
No, you know what I mean. So
when I do state this, like on my Facebook page, or even on my our Urban Sports Team Facebook page, or even my personal Facebook page, or Instagram or Twitter, that's not a slight. Kirk Cousins is a better pocket passer. He's not a better player. So there's two different things. So don't get in your feelings if someone says Kirk Cousins is a better pocket passer.
Ooh,
like it's not the end of the world. It is what it is.
Absolutely. Do we have another quarterback controversy in the making?
I don't think so, because I think this regime has scored.
Right.
They're not making that into – I think, to me, these reports are trying to make it into something. They want.
Well, that's what they do. They generate news. You know what I mean? They generate news and they want to stir up controversy to get people like us talking and all of the people who listen to the show.
Oh, yeah.
And on the message, the multiple message boards, they want to stir them up and they want to get them talking.
Go ahead. No. The person did call. She was going to talk about the show. We sound good on the
radio.
I'm a girl, Penny. What's up, Penny? What's going on? I trained her yesterday. I helped train people.
You know, that's what's up.
I train folks, but not, I'm letting them. Not having them pay me. I'm just being as a nice person. I'm doing it. The kindness out of my heart.
Oh man, you're a kind guy.
I try, man. I try to help everybody out. If you overweight, and Penny, you're not overweight. I'm not talking about you. But folks out there, if you're overweight and you're cool with me, like you're super tight with me, I'll train you for free.
Me, I monetize everything. I charge for everything. I'm a capitalist to the core.
Yeah, totally. Me and Will are totally different. But hey, if you need
some help. No, I'm not. I help people.
You know, he's a bike rider.
Avid.
He sure is, man. Sure is. But thanks for telling saying we sound good. I appreciate it, Penny. You're awesome. You rock. Let's get into another individual, the guy who's always injured. I've always wanted to see play, Philip Thomas, the guy who looked up to he looked up to Sean Taylor. He missed the first game. Looks like he's going to miss the second game with a hamstring injury. Last year, he missed the season with a sprained foot. I think it's called Liz Frank. Liz Frank injury. So, to me, he reminds me
of Malcolm Kelly tag just yet. He's only in his second year. He's battled through some injuries. Malcolm Kelly, even when he got on the field, was very inconsistent. Malcolm Kelly was physically dominant and didn't live up to that title or that potential. So don't give him that title just yet. What we will say is he hasn't been able to get on the field for injury purposes. Obviously, if the team coaching staff kept him around, his potential, they like what they see on tape from him. Uh-huh. So I wouldn't get harsh.
I'm really harsh. I think it's harsh. I'm just sick of player. I'm sick of people sweep this an individual on the field. Then all of a sudden, when you're trying to see him play, this is what happens. It's like he can't get on the field because he's always hurt.
Well, only in sports do with people because, they have some type of injury or something that affects them doing their job. And we understand that their health is important. But think of, the common folks like me and you. When we get sick, don't we take a day off? Do you go to work?
Man, I don't got it. I don't have to be sick to take off.
Okay, don't ride him so hard.
I'm not getting paid millions of dollars though, so it's different.
But it's still work. I mean, the grassroots is work. It's work. Man, okay. We all work. Something like we have some type of physical or mental ailment that prevents us from going to work and maximizing our potential.
Man, I work for the federal government. Take that how you want to take it. Man, that's it. My leave is good.
But no, he does have to get on the field and see actual live game action. I'm sure the coach, what they see on tape from him, or if they've seen from college, and also, you never know during OTAs and things like that.
They say he look good OTAs.
Right. He look good in shorts and a hat.
Exactly. That's nothing. That's Malcolm Kelly. Malcolm Kelly look good in all that. Malcolm Kelly was going to be the next big thing. I was a believer. I saw him in college. In the pros, I'm like, all right, Malcolm Kelly, all he needs is a shot. And then you see him and you hear stuff in camp, like he's going to be like the wide receiver. Never steps on the field, basically.
He'll step on the field, man. I have faith in him. He'll step on the team. Then maybe it might not be meant to be for him to play professional football. But I do think that he'll eventually suit up and he'll give the fans of Washington, D.C., show them the excitement, what everyone's been excited about him about at the free safety position.
Well, let's go into a game that Will was talking about earlier. Obviously, it's the second preseason game. Big game. The Redskins are playing the Browns on the 8 p.m.
This game, blockbuster. This game will be the highest rated preseason game ever. I'm telling you.
We know why. But
because you have Johnny Football, a former Heisman Trophy winner, the guy who's blockbuster, who's all over TMZ, ESPN, every news outlet, just about for football reasons and non-football reasons. Then you have Robert, the guy who's made a lot about his coaches. Now he finally has the confidence of his coaching staff. We need to get into that too, because that's actually interesting.
Get into what?
Him finally having the confidence of his coaching staff.
Who, RG3?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's totally different. I mean, he's overdoing it.
Specifically because they designed the offense around your strengths played in, and you had obviously the best rookie year ever in the history of football. But now you have Yeah, but this is going to be, you know, plus you add in the sprinkle of America's affliction with the fanatics. You know, everyone loves football. Everybody wants to see some semblance of a meaningful game. Second preseason game, the starters are going to play a little bit more. So, you know, it's going to be on ESPN. ESPN will hype the hell out of it this coming week.
That's it. That's the most.
It's the Monday Night Football game, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're going to hype the hell out of this game. You're going to see it plastered all over on ABC, Disney, ESPN. And it'll be the highest rated game ever, but a lot of fans would be interested to see, A, does Johnny Manziel take first-team reps?
No, he is.
He is?
He's on first-team. He's doing first-team. He's starting.
Okay, he's starting.
He's starting in the game against the Redskins. He's starting.
It'd be interesting to see Kyle Shanahan's play calling, because we all know that he was here last year. He has some insight into how Jim Haslett wants to run his defense.
Yeah, that's the thing, too.
So will Johnny Manziel be able to stand? Will Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan squeeze the pocket and force him to use his feet and make plays?
What are your thoughts about Johnny Football? Excuse me.
I call him Johnny Manziel because he hasn't earned anything. Football.
Gotcha.
I think, obviously, if you draft a guy at number 20, sometime in the future, he's going to be your starter.
Got him in college, though? Did you like his college game?
I like what he, from an entertainment standpoint, absolutely.
Okay.
The guy, you know, it was electric to watch him play. Will that fly in the NFL? I don't think. He'll need to tweak his game. You know, his running around everywhere, running 5 and 10 yards back behind the line of scrimmage, and, you know, just to being elusive with those defensive going to work because the players are bigger and stronger, faster mm-hmm. and smarter at this point.
7-11, his first preseason. Ran for something like that?
6-yard run, yeah. Detroit line. Mm-hmm. I think he definitely has an arm. He's a guy who can read the defense, make the progression. So, me more than anything is how Brian Hoyer hasn't really taken this thing by the neck and mm-hmm. really, you know, put his teeth around and elevated his play to a level where he's the shortcut starter. That's the most interesting thing to me.
Hoyer is a decent quarter. Well, you know, I mean, he's still unknown. A little stretch last season.
3-0.
Yeah, good stretch. 3-0. Last season, a good stretch. Scott Mitchell had a good stretch. You know what I mean? And he was a bum. You know what I mean? So,
and it's a new coaching staff.
Exactly.
So they don't have anything invested in him.
Exactly. And also, to be honest with you, I think Hoyer may be the better. To me, Hoyer is the best at this point in time. But it's the push to play Johnny Football. The Browns know that if he starts. And if showing he's better than Johnny Football, you have to start Johnny Football because he's going to make more money for you. He's going to fill the seats in Cleveland. He is. He's going to fill the seats for the Browns, and he's marketable. If that's between the two. If Hoyer is not 10 times better than Johnny Football, then Johnny Football should start. Because what he brings financially to your organization, you can't beat that.
All right, but you're looking at it from a financial standpoint. Let's look at it from the
wins and losses standpoint?
Wins and losses and long-term standpoint. Put him back there at this point. Again, remember, the first game of the season against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
Blitzburg.
Yeah.
Dick LeBeau.
Yeah.
Zone blitz.
Gotta learn.
You gotta learn something. Yeah, you. And I've never seen anybody learn playing being on the bench.
That's true.
I've never seen anyone learn sitting on the bench holding a clipboard. But I just think if all things are even, then I start Hoyer.
Okay.
Just because that gives Johnny Manziel the opportunity to watch, to see, to get a firmer grip and understanding on the speed of the game and things of that nature. But you made a very valid point because, if I'm not mistaken, Cleveland has had some blackouts since they've come back to the NFL. And definitely if you put this guy on, does he change that? But he also changes the net. I can guarantee you, Cleveland to get probably, you know, towards the end of the season and get one more national primetime game.
Yeah. For me, the reason why, you know, let me put this out there. I'm a fan of sitting a quarterback a whole season to watch. That's the way I think most rookie quarterbacks should be. Now, there are exceptions to the rules, obviously. You know,
over the last 2-3 years, you just look at it, Robert Griffin, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton,
Russell Wilson.
Ryan Tannehill, whereas most of those guys would have had a veteran who would have started possibly the first couple of games. Mm-hmm. Those guys just came in, and I guess because of their performance, that kind of speeds up the time clock for every other rookie quarterback coming after him.
But for every you know, RG3, to me, like, for instance, like, my man, my man Geno Smith starts. Like, he probably shouldn't have started, like, the whole season. I like Geno Smith, though. You know, I like him. And I think he's gonna have a great year this season. Like, E.J. Manuel, to me, should have never started. Like, I look at E.J. Manuel, and when I look at him as a quarterback, he should have had a veteran dude in front of him, and he would probably be better. Like, just watch E.J. Manuel. If you really watch E.J. Manuel and look at, as in terms of the mannerisms of a quarterback, as a true pocket quarterback, and mechanics, E.J. Manuel would have been cool sitting out 1 year, and probably would have been better the following season. It works out for certain people. Obviously, like, for instance, Phillip Rivers sitting behind Drew Brees for a while.
Phillip Rivers sat for a long time.
That's the thing of a one that now people tell is the best quarterback in the game right now, Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? So
Colin Kaepernick sat for a little bit.
Yeah, it can work out for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think you're better suited. Don't get me wrong. I think you're better suited in terms of I don't want to say guarantee, but close to a guarantee to be a better quarterback sitting. But there's so much pressure to play a quarterback. There's so much pressure to play the quarterback, the high drafted quarterback.
Especially this quarterback.
Yeah, especially this quarterback. You know, like we mentioned Russell Wilson. There was no pressure, but Pete Carroll just thought this dude was the better quarterback between the best quarterback between the bunch.
And that's the thing. Russell Wilson, for those who say, you know, Russell Wilson started, he had all the success. But Russell Wilson went into training camp. He was the number three quarterback, exactly. And he won the position flat out. Like we said, Johnny Manziel needs to firmly win this battle within training camp just to let everyone know this is my team. Because if not, you'll start to get the veterans in the locker room snickering. Mm-hmm. Well, he only got it because he was a first-round pick and because, you know, what his name and his presence brings.
But I have no problem with that for this situation, though. Because, again, this team needs a person to ride with, a guy who's going to make money for the organization. And if Hoyer isn't 10 times better than this kid, he should start. I mean, in my opinion, because for the organization, because this team, his excitement, to me, excitement can build up the most for a team anyway. So his excitement can build up the team. The defense is going to carry that team anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Offensively, you're going to be missing Josh Gordon, so defense is going to be carrying that team.
Well, you never know. He might get, you know, hopefully.
The second-hand theory?
The second-hand theory. listen, I've heard a lot of things, but the second-hand theory, that was a great one.
Yeah, you heard what happened to the Dallas Cowboy, Sandrick?
Yeah, he popping Molly.
Popping Molly's. I'm flexing. Woo! I'm sweating.
I'm sweating.
I messed it up.
I don't understand these guys. That's a whole nother subject for a different time.
I messed
though.
That song up. Oh, God.
All right, what do you want to see from your quarterback?
From RG3?
Yeah.
Game two, second game. What I want to see from him? I want to see him as a pocket quarterback, pocket passer. That's what I want to see. Because he's been clamoring, him and his daddy, they've been talking about, my son's a pocket quarterback. RG3's like, I want to be a pocket quarterback. I want to be compared to Aaron Rodgers. I want to be this. I want to be that. Okay, kid, it's your opportunity. Let's see the work you put in. If you really want to be it that bad, you don't want to be the Michael Vicks of the world. You don't want to be the Steve McNair to me was a pocket quarterback as he got older. But a young Steve McNair, you want to be RG3, the gunslinger? Go for it. Let's see your presence. Let's see if you can come off your reads quick. And be decisive with the football, placing it where it needs to be placed. If you can do that, I'm happy. If not, you need to mix up your game.
Yeah, if not, then you need to go back to the zone read.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but some things to mix up, to mix some things up for himself. Like roll the pocket.
So with the Shanahan's been doing.
Exactly.
No, that he didn't want to do.
Yeah, exactly. No, I understand him not wanting to run as much. I mean, design runs. But I'm just saying, like, some more boots. Like, for instance, when the Shanahans used to do with Jake Plummer a lot, they did the same. Don't get me wrong. The Shanahans did that with Kirk Cousins, too. They booted him. They did a lot of boots with him, too, as well. But I'm going to use Jake Plummer with Mike Shanahan did with Jake Plummer while he was in Denver, a lot of bootlegs, a lot of rollouts. Do that. So at least they're moving the pocket, and he's not in the pocket. He's outside, and maybe he can see better. So in that regard, I think that, you know, they can do that. But again, you want to be a pocket passer. So, hey, I want to see you as a pocket passer. I want to see you, you know, seven-step drop. Let that thing rip. I want to see you hesitating. Let that thing rip. And I want you to hit your wide receivers. And most importantly, I want you to be accurate.
I think that's what a lot of fans want to see. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, he has no more built-in excuses now. You know, it's not that the coaches once again, you have another offensive-minded head coach who's bringing in a system that's going to try to cater to your strengths, as the Shanahans did. He kept the zone run, but a lot of the other base principles he's keeping in the playbook and the game plan. So it'll be interesting to see. No excuses built in. You had a full off season. You don't have any knee problems. They upgraded the offensive line. You have a good running game. You have two number one receivers, and you have a top 10 tight end.
Yeah.
So you have no built in excuses now, young man. It's all on you.
It is all on you. Week one, it's all on you, son. And especially, too, they got Andre Roberts, who's a good three man at the wide receiver position.
Absolutely.
And you got Santana, who's
knowledgeable.
Slot.
So, yeah,
and you got no excuses.
None at all.
So, if you don't throw, I tell this to Ray. We're talking about Matt Ryan. Like, Matt Ryan has no excuse to be putting up, he should be always putting up Brady Breeze numbers. Because you have, at the time, his have Tony Gonzalez. But when he had Tony Gonzalez, he had Julio Jones, had Roddy White.
And you had Harry Douglas, who's a pretty good slot receiver.
Yeah. And you know what I mean? And you got a running game. There is no excuse for you not to be a dominant passer. Now go to RG3. The same thing applies. There is no excuse. Because you know what? You're off. Like, Alfred Morris could be, if you're not going to play eight in the box, I mean, Alfred Morris can kill. If he can get, and if they want to now say, okay, we need to put eight in the box, you're going to have man coverage somewhere. You're going to have man coverage.
And you have one of the fastest wide receivers in the game.
Exactly. There's no excuse. You should dominate. You should dominate as a passer.
Absolutely. No built-in excuses. But it'll be interesting to see come Monday how this game plays out. What else do you want to see from the team?
All right. What I want to see from this team is I want to see the defense. I wanted to see Phillip Thomas, but he's not going to play. So what I want to see Brian Arakpo and Kerrigan continue to do what they need to do to be dominant. I want to see how the secondary is going to hold up. D'Angelo Hall got hurt in practice. If he doesn't play, that's fine. I mean, I know what I'm getting with D'Angelo Hall. I want to see some more out of Amerson, see if Amerson's taking it to the next level. I want to see more Keenan Robinson, seeing if he's going to be that player at the middle. I have a good feeling about Keenan Robinson, to be totally honest with you. And I want to see the offensive line. I want to see Morgan Moses. I want to see him some more. I want to see him mash folks. I want to see him, have that mean streak, kind of put himself in a position to challenge Tyler Columbus, even though it doesn't look like he has a chance to. So, is it Columbus or Columbus?
Columbus.
Columbus. I thought so. Columbus. I think about Columbus. All right. Columbus. Challenge Columbus to a point where, you know, the coaching staff can think, yeah, we should play Moses. So I like saying that name, Moses. It's cool. Biblical. So I want to see that transpire. Also, again, goes back to RG3. I want to see RG3 do it. I mean, I want to see him be a pocket passer.
First thing, I'm not a fan. I think everyone knows that, so I'll throw out that disclaimer. If anything, with this team, I want to see special teams.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it didn't look good.
I want to see special teams. I want to see improvement on special teams. Second thing I want to see, I want to see Arakpo. Does he consistently push the pocket? He's going against one of the best left tackle in the game, Joe Thomas.
Yeah.
So I want to see how he hands up. I want to see how he matches up. Earn that $10 million, big boy. You said you was worth more, so start to earn that $10 million this year.
Show the world, baby.
Two, I want to see Keenan Robinson. We know that he's fast enough, so if he's able to pick up on the defensive concepts, he'll be able to be more of an asset to this team in pass coverage. But what can he stop the run? We know that the Shanahans love to run that inside zone, so we know that they're going to be running right at Keenan Robinson.
Only one Shanahan, this one.
One Shanahan, excuse me. We know that Kyle loves to run that inside zone, so I want to see Keenan Robinson. Are you physical enough to get up on when a blocker gets to the second level, shed the block and make a tackle? Third thing I want to see the safety play. That's out of the secondary last year. I think that was probably the biggest weakness was the safety play. You know, Amerson looks like he's coming along. D'Angelo Hall, you know what you're going to get from there. Brandon Merriweather. And How's he going to hold up, you know?
That's important.
Yeah, so I'm safety.
And Ryan Clark, too. Ryan Clark. Didn't play last game.
Didn't play last game. Will he be healthy enough to play this game?
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, sum it up, I want to see the special teams. I want to see Keenan Robinson versus the run. And I want to see the safety, progression in the play of the safeties.
Yeah, but, and I'm glad you mentioned the special teams because it's against the Patriots, though we didn't give up a touchdown or anything, to be honest with you. But it was lax to me. They had a couple good returns. Was called back. Due to some penalties, there was a fumble too, so that would kind of change everything. But they had some good returns, so I'm still not 110% on the special team. And there's a battle within the kicking game, and Forbath, who I thought would definitely get the job, missed the kick, and the other kicker looked pretty good. So to me, special teams, I agree with Will, that's something that needs to be improved. We saw what happened last season, one of the worst special teams I've ever seen in this area as a Washington Redskins fan, period.
Might have been the worst special teams in history of NFL football.
Yeah, it may have been. So I want to see improvement with that as well. But anyway, it's about time for a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about a new segment we call Mega's NBA.
That's right. This segment is dedicated to Ron, for those of you who don't know. Ron was a huge basketball fan.
Yeah, so we're probably
avid fan of the NBA. So we're going to switch it up, and this will be Ron's time. You know, we'll talk about the NBA coming up next.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
All right, there's Mega's NBA. Like Will T said, this segment is for Mega Ron, Big Ron. If you didn't know, Big Ron, he believed in this whole thing called, this whole trend that everybody had on social media called DC Rising, referring to the Washington Wizards, when they was going to that playoff thing. He knew I hated that term. That term was very annoying, as you all heard during the during like Ron's clip. John Wall, who was invited to the Olympic team trials, what the USA basketball, they call it.
Trials.
Yeah, USA basketball. Got cut, and he believes he never had a fair chance. He never had a chance to really make the team.
Totally agree with him. Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree with him. Just because, how late he was invited. B, you have one of the point guards, Kyrie Irving, who is a former Mike Krzyzewski player, and we all know that Mike Krzyzewski loves his guys. And he's going to go with his guys. There's even talk that Mason Plumlee might make the team.
Yeah, over DeMarcus Cousins, which is ridiculous. What is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But, no, I totally agree with John Wall. I think he didn't have a chance, really, a fair chance to make this team. Then also from the standpoint, you look at it, it's a numbers game. You had Derrick Rose. You have Damian Lillard. You have Kyrie Irving. And Steph Curry at the point guard position. Fair.
One person, okay, this is the thing that annoys me, and you mentioned Coach K, and also you all want to chime in, the number is 202-495-0904, that's 202-495-0904, again, you talk about this topic, and also, or you can even mention a cool Ron story, but yeah, what amazes me is that, we stated this before, John Wall has shown that he can take his team to the postseason. John Wall has shown to improve his team when he steps on the court. I.e. the year before last, when John Wall was hurt and came back to the Wizards, and then that team was like tremendously better with him on the court.
I thought, what was it, he missed the first 50 games?
Yeah, and as soon as he came back, this team was winning. They were actually a very competitive team, beating good teams on a regular basis. Playing the full season the year after takes this team to the playoffs. They beat the in the first round, the Chicago Bulls pushed the Pacers to six. Really could have won the series. And then now we look at in the summer, he's not over a Kyrie Irving who has shown not to get his team even over 500. I like Kyrie Irving as a player. I'm getting wrong. He's a baller. But in a weak Eastern Conference, when you are deemed the best young point guard in the game, Chris Paul is a prime example. Chris Paul came to New Orleans. That team wasn't as talented in a tough Western Conference and took his team to the postseason in year two, right? We're looking at Kyrie Irving, who is compared to a Chris Paul in terms of his ball handling, what he can do with the basketball, shooting as a point guard who can actually shoot the rock. And he still can't get this team over the hump because he's not a leader of men. You know what I mean? But John Wall is shown to be a leader of men.
I'll take it a step further. In international basketball, you need two things out of your point guard. Well, three things. You need point guards who can hit the three, which Kyrie Irving does better than John Wall. But you need two other things that are very vital. You need a point guard who can control the pace, the tempo, and the game from the perspective of his ball handling, getting in and out. And John Wall does that a hell of a lot better than Kyrie Irving. Then also, you need a point guard who is superior pressuring the ball on defense. And there's no way that anyone can tell me with a straight face that Kyrie Irving is even on the level of John Wall when it comes to extending pressure on the ball. We all know that John Wall is a much better defensive player on the ball and off the ball than Kyrie Irving. So, you know, when you take all things into consideration, I know that Coach K didn't want to put the same types of player at the point guard position. You know, you can get a guy like Derrick Rose, if he's healthy, you know, to apply pressure in the defense, in the backcourt defensively. You can get a Steph Curry to knock down threes. To knock down threes. Damian Lillard, he's a guy who's more of a playmaker, but he still plays pretty good defense. You can make the case for you definitely can make the case for Derrick Rose and Seth Curry over John Wall when it comes down to coming point guards. But over Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving, I really don't see it.
I can give Damian Lillard did, you know, 16 in postseason. I can almost get it. But this is my issue. You mentioned a good point. But you know how many shooting point guards do you need? You mentioned Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. All right, Damian Lillard's on the squad. You're Damian Lillard's squad. Derrick Rose. You got Steph Curry, Damian Lillard. Those are two awesome shooters right there at the point guard position. So why keep Kyrie?
Because he's a Duke guy.
Yeah, exactly. But then why keep Kyrie? Because Kyrie's a shooter, but you don't need but there's so many shooters at the point guard position.
And then also with Kyrie Irving, even though I know Paul George had the freakish accident, I'm concerned if Kyrie Irving can stay healthy and play.
Yeah.
He hasn't shown the ability to stay healthy and play. Yeah. And also, he shows when he goes to the bucket, he's very fragile when he gets knocked on the ground. Yeah. It's almost like you squinch up like, ooh, is he hurt? All right, he's hurt. He's getting up. He's not a warrior when it comes to taking it to the basket. Plus, and also mentally, if things aren't going his way, he kind of mentally checks out and gets frustrated. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm annoyed by it because I think John Wall is getting slighted. And I do believe it's a Coach K. I favor Kyrie because he's a Dookie type thing. You know what I mean? Because once I heard the Plumlee thing, I almost, like, died laughing over DeMarcus Cousins. I thought it was hilarious. Like, it's still hilarious to me.
Yeah, it still is.
Like, if you can say that with a straight face, you're stupid.
Yeah, I understand from the perspective of what Coach K is throwing out. And, you know, we know he's the master of manipulator. He wants a big that hustles, that doesn't need the ball on the block, and plays defense and rotates well on defense. Plumlee does some of those things, but we're all talent.
Yeah,
and you think about you have to play Spain and you have to play the two Gasol brothers. No. The Gasol boys will use Mason Plumlee on the block. I just don't see it.
So let me put it this way. You can give me an all-star big who can do that. Plumlee is not that. I can get you an all-star big who hustles. You're better off taking Greg Monroe.
Yeah, if that's the case.
You know what I mean? Don't give me this BS about Plumlee like he's something super, like he's some star because he can hustle and run the. Greg Monroe can do it, and he can pass. And you need a passing big in Olympic basketball. You need passing big. So I don't want to hear that. I wouldn't call Greg Monroe an Olympian, a guy who I put on a team right now. But if you're going to use Plumlee as that example over Cousins, no, Don't do that. It's insulting.
It is. That's very insulting. But, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal, because Bradley Beal was also cut, yeah, they should use this as motivation.
I totally agree.
Use his motivation.
Same thing. Another individual should use his next situation, his motivation, is Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins. He's got he's pending right now. He's been,
but we all know it's
going
reported.
Down. It's going to go down. Wiggins has been traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Kevin Love. Wiggins and Bennett have been traded to the Timberwolves for Kevin Love. I think, and also which included for the Minnesota, which I'm sorry, what Cleveland is also getting is a protected first round pick.
No, Minnesota's
Minnesota's getting protected. Minnesota's getting protected first round pick. Do you like the trade? Who do you like it for? Let me put it that way.
I'm not a guy who lives in that world of ambiguity, that gray area. Things usually are black and white to me. So this is going to surprise some people. I'm actually going to say Minnesota. I think this is good for Minnesota.
It's not surprising. That's correct.
Well, no, a lot of people saying Cleveland.
People stupid.
Well, the reason I'm saying it is this. Minnesota, you have a history of no one wanting to stay around. Now you have a guy who's motivated, who's kind of been seen as an outcast to what Cleveland was trying to do. So, you know, if there was any trepidation on Wiggins, is he mentally tough enough? Will he step to the forefront and be that number one? Now he has the opportunity, because in Cleveland he wasn't going to be the number one. He was going to be the third option at best. In Minnesota, he's the guy. I know they already have Ricky Rubio, but please don't get me started. Ricky Rubio is like the worst shooting point guard in the history of the NBA. Then you have LaVine. Is that
two-guard?
Yeah, that they drafted out of UCLA. He's going to be nice.
I thought you were talking about Deion. Well, that player, they had a player, an overseas player who was all right, too. He's a two-guard. I forgot his name. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, Andrew Wiggins clearly comes in as the number one, the best player. In Cleveland, he would have been the number three, and people would have – it would have been a lot of pressure for him to kind of become Scottie Pippen to LeBron's Jordan. So I really think that this is the best opportunity for Andrew Wiggins going forward. Now let's look at the other side of the trade. Kevin Love. All right, so you have King James, and he's earned the title King, LeBron King James. You have a guy who's a two-time NBA champion, four-time MVP, Olympic gold medalist, the best player in the game. Then you have his number two, who's going to be Kevin Love, who's a stat machine.
Number two,
yeah. Who's going to be the number two?
It's be Kyrie. But go ahead. I still think it's be Kyrie.
Okay, he's a stat machine. 26-12, multiple time All Star, won an Olympic gold medal. That stretch four that everyone's looking for in today's game. But what has he ever won in the NBA? Nada. Exactly. What has he ever won in college? Nada. Yeah. Then you. So I say all that to say this: you're putting two guys in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love who've never won anything. Especially at the NBA level. They've won in high school. They haven't won anything in college, and they haven't won anything in the NBA level. And on top of that, they haven't shown the propensity to improve the play of those around them. So you take all of that. LeBron James, you know, even though he has the talent, he has the pieces around, he still needs to be able to show those guys how to win. Then you take on top a rookie coach who's much heralded over in the European game, but in the NBA, it's a totally different game. Now, there are some of his concepts that he could use in the NBA, you know, spacing the floor, back screens, down screens, things of that nature. But you still don't know how to win in the NBA. So the biggest thing for Cleveland is you have to learn how to win. You have to know if these two guys are dedicated. And also, there's been talk that Kevin Love isn't always the best teammate.
He ain't a good defender either.
He's not a great defender either. So you're going to have to put Anderson, Varejao. You're going to have to mask that defense in certain ways. And there are a couple clips that I was watching on NBA TV where, you know, where Kevin Love was, you know, he was down on the block and his man was out towards the three-point line. And he would just let the guard go right past him. Not rotating, nothing.
Not a defender at all.
So go ahead. No, I don't mean to hog
it. No.
But continue. To me, I really think in the long term, and most people don't look long term, I think this is an excellent trade for Minnesota.
No, I'm totally with you. I'm going to go into Cleveland, and like you said, Kevin Love, like, if I want to break this down, let me put it this simple. Like, Kevin Love is defensively, if you compare them to the big three in Miami, let's put it this way, because I think that's what everybody wants to compare it to for LeBron's sake. Kevin Love isn't defending the Chris Bosh is, and I'm not saying Chris Bosh is an all-world defender with his feet, and he can move his feet, and he can play around the basket, and he uses his height well.
And he's willing to take a charge. He's
willing to take a charge. Kevin Love doesn't move his feet well on defense. You know, he's a great rebounder. I think we all get that confused for, like, being a decent defender. Being a great rebounder doesn't mean you're a good defender. It means you hustle.
Means you have you have rebounding is not a science. It's a will.
It's a will.
You have to will. You have to want to. You know how to learn, read how the ball's going to come off the rim, position your man, mm-hmm. and the will to go and get the ball. Yeah. It's not anything
special. But again, let me go to Minnesota. They went out in this situation because, like Will said, like Kevin Love ain't winning Minnesota. He ain't win. He ain't show you. He put up stats. I'm gonna say this again. Al Jefferson put up stats in Minnesota. You put stats up on a bad team. Let's see how it is when it's a little bit more competitive. The rebound is going to always be there. That aspect's going to always be there in his game. The scoring's going to be a little different because, again, when you're the only dog in town on a bad team, the only true scorer, it's easier to score. I don't care what anybody tells me. It's easier to score. He's now going to be in a situation with LeBron James. Yes, you're going to probably think that, yeah, he should score easier. It's a different beast on a good team. It's a different beast. All right? Now, all right, so in Minnesota, and I'm looking at Minnesota, the most important thing for Wiggins, he gets to learn how to be a star. And that's the thing that people have to understand. I've stated this before with Michael Beasley in his situation in Miami. When you get drafted by a good team with a superstar player, chances are you will not be at the level you need to be because you do not learn how to be a superstar or a star basketball player. There's a reason why, you know, when Beasley got to Miami, he wasn't able to be a star because he couldn't take 20 shots. As a scorer, he needed to take 20 shots. He couldn't take 20 shots because who's getting 20 shots? Dwayne Wade. Now, in this situation, if Wiggins went to the Cleveland Cavs, which I did want him to stay for other purposes. I wanted LeBron. I think Wiggins would be better for LeBron in the long run. But in this situation for Wiggins, he wouldn't be able to take 20 shots. He would take about, 11, 13, 12, 13, and have to maximize his points off limited shots. And that's not fair for a young player. It's really not. He needs to grow into a speed to be a scorer. And honestly, if you've seen him play in Kansas, you know that he didn't have that mentality anyway as a guy who was like a volume scorer because, you know, he was a freshman and he had to play with guys who were older than him, guys who were more established in college. And now in the NBA, is a different beast. The NBA, that doesn't matter. They're looking for you to be the savior in Minnesota.
Yeah, and also he had to play with a big man, Joel Embiid,
who clogged up the lane, and was known now as the best player on the team. So mm-hmm. So now he's going to a situation where the talent isn't as big. Like if we want to compare it to a college situation for him, looking in the college, like oh wow, Embiid's pretty good. Oh man, I think I have to defer to him in this situation. He doesn't have to defer to anybody in Minnesota because no one is a household name right now. Rubio's not a scorer. Brewer's a good defender, but if you don't look at Brewer. You know he had a 50-point game last season. You look at Brewer as a guy who's going to consistently drop buckets.
Absolutely.
So
not.
He's fine. He's going to come in the situation and think he's the man. He's going to automatically really think he's the man. It's a good situation. Matter of fact, I was reading online and Bill Self, coach of Kansas basketball team. And he was a former coach for Wiggins, obviously, last season, said Wiggins would prefer to play for Minnesota.
And I think he should. If you think about it, just looking at it chronologically throughout this whole process, you know, with LeBron going back to Cleveland and then there's clear-cut evidence that Andrew Wiggins may not have been there for long.
Of course.
Starting out with the letter. He said when he go back to Cleveland, he wants to show those young guys, Kyrie Irving, Deion Waiters, yeah. Tristan Thompson. He gets to play with his favorite teammate, Anderson Varejao.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you had the last two number one picks were also on that team. Why didn't you embrace those guys and name them in the ladder? Because you knew something was up. You knew something was coming. We all know that in Cleveland, LeBron is the GM.
There you go.
We know he's the GM and the coach. Things are going to go his way for this tenure. So. He never really was embraced by LeBron, you know, for me personally. You know, he said he hasn't had any, he didn't have any not contact with LeBron after the draft. And to me, you know, if I'm the best player in the NBA and then we get the number one player in the draft, why wouldn't you reach out to him? Why wouldn't you, you know, you say you want to be a big brother to them. Why, to the other players, young guys on the team, why not be a big brother to the guy who could be your potential Scottie Pippen? When he comes in and he steps on the floor from day one, he has the ability to play the best wing player on the opposition. So, you know, Andrew Wiggins was never really fully embraced by LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers organization. So now he gets to go to a place where he's the savior. He gets to go to a place where he'll be embraced by the fans, the management, and also he'll get a opportunity to evolve into that type of, to grow that type of personality, to be that alpha dog, to be that number one player.
You already know what I feel about it. You think he's in a better situation, though, personally, for his own career?
For Andrew Wiggins?
For Andrew Wiggins.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because just for these two reasons, Minnesota hasn't shown as an organization that they can move in a direction to really develop players and make them superstars. So you have that against you.
Other than KG.
Yeah. No free agent wants to come to Minnesota and play ball. Just for those two perspectives, but then, you know, look on the other side of it, Cleveland. He would have had the opportunity to learn from the best player in the game. He would have had the opportunity to slowly develop, becoming a star player from a perspective of preparation and what it takes on and off the court to be that guy. But he doesn't have that now, which he doesn't have now. But I think long term for him, he gets to go into a situation where you don't know how Andrew Wiggins handles pressure. So will he handle? There are two different types of pressure. In Cleveland, he would have had to been the pressure of being the eventual Scottie Pippen to LeBron's Jordan. In Minnesota, he has the pressure of being a savior.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to make a Michael Jordan comment. I saw it in your face and your eye. Minnesota, he has the pressure of being the savior. Is he mentally strong enough to handle that? So, you know, two different types of pressure, but I think Wiggins long term is in a better situation, but just currently now, no, not at all.
All right. So I agree with that. I actually do agree with that point. So if you're Wiggins, if I'm Wiggins, I despise LeBron James. And I think
despise is a strong word.
Yeah, I know what I just said.
Right.
If I'm Wiggins, if I see this dude in center court, I don't even want to shake his hand. Because that's how you felt. That's how you carried me, you know, when you wrote that letter and talking about everybody else. You didn't want to get to know. You didn't get to want to see me or even work with me and see where I was as a basketball player.
So in other words, that letter is in a frame.
It's right.
Andrew Wiggins' bed.
Every day I wake up, I look at that letter. I'm in the gym. Every day I wake up, I'm calling my trainer. We in the gym.
So that's his Michael Jordan moment.
That is it. I ain't gonna lie. That's my moment. Like, I look at this dude and I'm like, you know what? Anytime I play you, I want to bust your ass. I'm dead set. Like, I want to bust your ass. I want to go at you. I want to dunk on you. I want people to YouTube it. I want people to I want people to spam it so you can try to take it down. Like, I'm looking at you like that dude. I'm a LeBron James fan, but I'm looking at you like I'm that dude. I'm telling you, every time I play you, it's serious. Every time I want you to pray when you're in the league for 3 years, like it's gonna be in 3 years. I want you to, when you see me dropping 26 a game, one of the best young players in the game right now, the defensive, two way baller. And when you see me, you're going like, dang, I got Kevin Love over you. Like, what was I thinking? You know what I mean? I want you to think that. That's how I'm looking at it. Like, you have now made me hungry. I was already hungry. Like, if this is my thing. If Wiggins is about ball, if Wiggins is about not just being a great basketball player, but trying to be the best basketball player in the world, if he's about that, this letter then set it off. If he's about that life, this letter set it off. Like, LeBron's interaction with him set it off. You know what I mean? LeBron being the GM and saying, yeah, I want Kevin Love over you. I'm dismissing you. I'm not even trying to see how you play. I don't even want to look at you in the summer league. I don't want none of that. Like, I want Kevin Love. I don't need you. If I'm Wiggins, like, the best player in the world just carried me? Oh, yeah. I'm not. You ain't about my life no more, son. Well, you are about my life. You're about my life to a point where now you drive me. My hatred to you drives me to be the best basketball player in the world.
That's a very strong statement. But I agree with you because I'm like you. I'm mastering the art of pettiness. I'm mastering it.
I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
No, I totally agree with you. I'm mastering the art of pettiness. And I think everyone should. Yeah. I mean, pettiness is what helps wake me up some mornings.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, you need to be motivated. Like, That should motivate anybody, in my opinion, to a guy that tells you, like, you're not good enough to make my team better. You're not good enough to get me to the championship. This dude is better than you to get me to the championship, to win the championship. Like, dude, I'm the number one pick in the draft.
I'm a pretty bad dude myself.
You know, Pete Scouts said, like, if I reach my max potential, I can be a dominant NBA player. But you just picking a dude who's never took his team over 500 over me? Okay, I'm fine. When I see you, and when I see you on the court, you're going to know I'm there. Like, you're going to know I'm there. When you're going up for that fadeaway, fadeaway shot, or that, you know, try to put three on me, and I block it, you'll know I'm there. You'll know. You know what I'm saying? Year two, when I'm dropping 22 points, maybe on first with a first team defense, maybe second, you know, most honorable mention on offense.
NBA? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're going to be like, dang. And Kevin Love is only dropping about 15 points a game because you're on the team. You'd be like, damn, what was I doing? You know what I mean? So, you know, that's if Wiggins has that mindset to be the best.
All right, we spoke on how we both feel that LeBron is the GM for this team.
Yeah.
We feel as if this whole Kevin Love thing was kind of engineered by him.
Yeah.
Do you think he has too much power?
Yes. Way too much power.
Speak on it. How so?
I'm going to say this too. Like, in any other team, this trade doesn't go down. And I don't care whatever superstar it is. If you give the GM the true power, this trade doesn't go down. You don't trade a number one pick overall for a guy who hasn't got his team over 500.
But I'll stop you there. For a guy who a lot of people consider the best at his position.
I don't care.
A guy who's 26-12.
Don't care. You like a guy who hasn't proven to be valuable on a good team. He's not the best power forward in the game. That's Aldridge, LaMarcus
statistically.
Aldridge. That's LaMarcus Aldridge. He does it. He does it well. Scores over 20. He's in the block. Let's look at it. A power forward is a who can get buckets when you need him. All right, a dominant power forward who gets buckets when you need them. All right, he doesn't get garbage buckets. You know what I mean? To decide his stats up. He gets you buckets when you need them. Even when Kevin Love he was on that tremendous run where he getting a bunch of rebounds and points at the same time. Like, he was getting like 20-something rebounds. His team was still losing. All right? They're still losing. Like, let LaMarcus Aldridge give you buckets and rebounds. We call that important, impactful plays. When he does that, his team wins games. Kevin Love's team loses games. I don't care if it's in the Western Conference. That does crap for me. They don't get over 500. If you're not over 500, you're not that valuable. So, again, as a GM, if I'm looking at the situation, I have a potential.
I'll say this.
Go ahead, sorry.
In Kevin Love's defense, his team did have a lot of injuries this year. So that may play into it, have a little something to do with it. But I'm just speaking the facts. You know what I mean? A counter-argument.
I'm just going to say this. I know of a guy, he plays for your team. And he was very, very young. He played for the New York Knicks. His name was Carmelo Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
He played with the Denver Nuggets. Got drafted by the Denver Nuggets. Was a horrible, horrible team. When he was in Syracuse, that year, the Nuggets were a horrible team. Did they make any big changes within the roster? Not really. Carmelo gets there. Playoff team. That is a star. You know what I mean? That is a star. That is impactful points. Kevin Love. He's had a bunch of lottery pick players, obviously, because, you know, that's a bunch of lottery pick players
because
they draft forever. He gets on that team. This team is still up there.
But David Kahn was the GM. David Kahn.
Dude.
This is the guy who took 3 point guards.
I know. I understand. I understand. But, again, you are that dude. You're Kevin Love.
Okay.
You're like, the best power forward in basketball. To me, to be honest with you, if you got a dominant big, you're a playoff team. That's my opinion. Like, you got a dominant big, you're a playoff team 9 times out of 10. That's the era of basketball I know of. You know, if you're a dominant big, like a true star big, you win a game. You're I know at least you're getting over 500. I know that for a fact.
Today's game has changed.
Yeah, but I mean, if you name like the dominant bigs in the league, like they're over, they win games. Like, I'm serious, they win games.
You can't. Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis is not a dominant big yet. He's getting there, though. Don't get me twisted. He's getting there. Anthony Davis will be. Once he gets to the level he needs to, I guarantee you that team's over 500 easily. Guarantee you that much. I'm a believer in Anthony Davis. But guarantee you that much. That's all I'm saying. Like, even like Dwight Howard, them Orlando teams weren't that good.
Man, those Orlando teams were horrendous.
Yeah, but horrendous. He's dominant big. Just saying, a true dominant big. Kevin Love, a guy who gets 20. I'm talking about Kevin Love, supposedly, when his stats, those are dominant stats. If you're getting a guy that's getting 15-plus boards, those are dominant stats. Team never wins over – the team never is over 500 every year. Never over 500.
Well, I mean, you know, still have a lot of time to see. You know, I can't wait till the NBA season starts. You know, it'd be interesting. One more question to ask you, though, about basketball, about on this subject. Mm-hmm. Does Love make them the favorite to win the NBA championship?
No, in my opinion.
Well, does he make them the favorite to win the East?
Yes, but they were to me, they were a favorite to win the East with Wiggins. The East doesn't have anybody. I don't care. Like, Paul George injury hurts. I mean, obviously, like, Chicago's still going to be a threat. That's going to be, Chicago's going to be a threat because of Pau Gasol. I want to see Pau Gasol, Kevin Love, how that goes. Because Pau Gasol I think it was scoring Kevin Love with ease.
Yeah, Pau Gasol has a lot of moves down on the block.
But I think Kevin Love will wheel him on the boards because I think he has more will.
Also got Joakim Noah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be interesting. Chicago is going to be tough. And with the drafting of McBuckets. That's right.
Then they also had the guy who they brought over from Europe.
Yeah, he's supposed to be like that too.
Yeah, the best European player. So. Mm-hmm. That it's going to be interesting to see those two guys, Chicago and Cleveland, go head to head.
It's going
to
all be predicated on Derrick Rose, though. Still all predicated on Derrick Rose.
That team.
Oh, did you see his highlights?
God, did you see? Yeah, from the
my goodness, he's back.
Yeah, but only thing that scares me is he's still jumping off two feet. Yeah. One leg. If he wants to preserve and be around for a longer time, he's got to stop jumping so violently off of two feet.
It look mean though, man.
Yeah,
it look mean. It looked mean. But anyway, real quick, before we go into commercial break, I want to talk about the Lakers. Lakers now have hired Byron Scott as their head coach. You know, I talk about this because Byron Scott, you know, is near and dear to my heart as an old-time Lakers fan. Now he's the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. I think is very sweet.
Magic is very happy. Magic was still throwing shots at D'Antoni. He was like, if we never shoot another three-pointer again, I'll be happy. I'm like, Magic really doesn't.
He really hates D'Antoni. He believes that D'Antoni brought the organization down. Yeah, he really should look at his number 24, but
I can't fault a man for getting all the money.
No. I'm not mad at Kobe. I'm just saying, like, you know, Kobe is
the reason. He ran off Dwight Howard.
Yeah, Kobe's the reason why people don't want to come. I'm just come to L.A., just telling you the truth. All right, so will he bring Showtime back to L.A.?
Not immediately. Not with that roster.
Man, that roster has gotten better. They need to sign Michael Beasley. They brought him for workout. They need to sign him like ASAP.
Okay.
I'm telling you, they signed Beasley, man. I'm back in LA ASAP.
You like, back in LA?
Dude.
You on the Steve Nash bandwagon?
Beasley. Man, I'm back in LA. I'm back.
Swaggy P.
Yes. Nick Young. Hell, Swaggy P. Yes.
That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out with him and Kobe. Nick Young doesn't give up the ball.
Yeah, him and Kobe get along now.
They get along now.
Yeah, I know.
They get along now because they haven't played together. They've practiced together, but they haven't played together.
I know.
So that'll be interesting to see how that. But long term, I think this is a step in the right direction to get this thing turned around for the Lakers. You have a guy who has that Laker DNA in him.
Yeah,
who knows how Dr. Jerry Buss did things, and he'll try to bring some of the nostalgia back for the Lakers. But will it work? Obviously, he's a good coach. We know he's a good coach when given the talent.
Yeah, he was a good coach
in New Jersey, and then also he was coach of the year in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's a good coach.
So you know he's a good coach. He knows his basketball. So it'll be. I think ultimately make a long answer short. Yes, I think he does over time.
Yeah, I love Byron Scott. So I hope he succeeds. It's going to be predicated. He's going to need a point guard. For him to succeed, that's the way his offense works. He has to have a great point guard. So Lakers have to do him a good job. Not this season, obviously, because they don't have one. And I'm not going to say Jeremy Lin's one. And I'm not going to say Steve Nash is one at the moment in his career. But you know, down the road when they do draft a lottery pick next season, they need to get a point guard. And because Carlos Boozer, you're not the one. I do like Julius Randle. I think he looks very impressive. Kobe Bryant's on that roster, so I'm just waiting it out. You know, Kobe Bryant retires, this Laker team will be where they need to be at. Because okay. they'll be looking for the future. They'll be really looking at the future when Kobe Bryant retires. And then we can do the things that we'll do things the Laker way.
I mean, they are looking towards the future, all those short, inexpensive contracts they signing guys to.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, looking to the future so we can get people who want to be. Because I'm telling you, when Kobe leaves and that contract is up, then people are going to say, like, wow, the Lakers got a star. Like, how did they get a star? It's because number 24 left. Everybody thinks like number 24 brings people in. No, he makes people want to leave.
Nah.
Or people not want
to come
and visit.
I've never seen a superstar who wants to play with Kobe. Haven't seen it. Outside of the Olympics.
Look, dude, like this is the realest thing ever. All my years of being a Laker fan, I've never seen players turn down the Lakers. Like, period. Like, this is amazing to me. Like, Kobe, it's because, I'm telling you, I've never seen, I don't care if Dr. Buss, people can bring that Dr. Buss crap all they want. Like, I've never seen a player like come to LA and not want to stay. You know what I mean? Like it's LA, damn it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's LA. It's LA. It don't make no damn sense. LeBron just chose Cleveland over LA. Like, seriously.
Dwight Howard chose Houston
over LA. Like, it's real. I mean that tax free money though.
Yeah. State tax.
Yeah, that means a lot. That means a lot.
All right, but let's go into commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking MLB.
It's the Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. All
right. This is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
Well, you've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Mike Wilmer.
Bands make her dance. 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 Bands make her dance.
Bands make her dance. Bands make her dance. All these cheeks popping, popping. I'm just popping bangs. Bands make her dance. Bands will make her dance. These chicks clapping and they ain't using hands. Bands will make her dance. Bands will make her dance. All these chicks popping, popping. I'm just popping bangs.
Bands will make her dance. Bands will make her dance. As you can tell, I'm a 3-6 fan. I done gave y'all the old State Fly joint. And now you got Juicy J. Just, you know. Hey, Juicy J, get back with DJ Paul, man. We need y'all back, man. Give me one CD together. That's all I'm asking for. Then get Black back, too.
Crunch Black?
Yeah, get him back. Country Black. What's up, Jew? What's going on? You listening to me, baby? Oh, yeah. Jew, if you listen, no, you're not, because you're not really loyal enough. You bastard. Hey, we train out there, man. Don't forget, I'm about to bring you back to your respectable weight. You know, I told him this, man. Jew's one of my homies too from college, man. That's my best friend in life. But he knows this, man. Dude, you need to get in shape. It's exercise or die, man. We doing this thing. Dude been dodging me, making excuses, trying to say like, I ain't working no hours, Wally. I don't get on.
Don't put him on blast on the radio.
I'll put him on blast anytime I want to. He's okay. He'll live. Jew, you're not even listening. And if you do know Jew, and you hear this, tell Jew for me. That, you know, tell Jew that I said this. So that therefore, you know, I'll just motivate him. I told you I'm going to be on him. I gotta motivate this dude. You know what I mean? He needs
not
to be motivated.
Football season comes.
It's a whole different beast.
Whole different beast.
Anyway, like Will T said, man, we talking basketball. But real quick, again,
Baseball.
My bad. Baseball. But real quick, again, you know, we'll make a fund donation to Ron's fund to help, you know, support his kids and whatnot. The website is www.gofundme.com/CBT730. That's CBT730. Again, it's just, you know, just to help out, support the family, man. You know, just try, you know, anything is good to me, man. Anything. So do what you can. If you can, it's okay. No one's going to kill you. No one's going to hate you. You know, but if you can, it's a blessing. Look at it as a blessing. And also, you want to call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. All right, let's get into some baseball. Nationals, they had a series against the Braves. Lost 2 out of 3. Should they be concerned? It's the Braves.
Absolutely. And this is why. I mean, there's some reason for you to be like, all right, there's hope, then there's other reasons for you not. The first game, Steven Strasburg started. Steven Strasburg, he gave up 6 runs. Gave up 6 runs relatively early. Even though the Nats came back and made it close, because at one point the Nats were down 6-0, I think, bottom of the fourth, they were down 6-0. Then you had the rain delay. Then the Nats started pecking away at that lead. Then they came back and they ultimately lost 7-6. Steven Strasburg, as we start to round out, and this is August, you know, August leads into September and to October. If Steven Strasburg is he going to be part of that playoff rotation? If they make they'll make the playoffs, but will he be one of the guys in that rotation? You know, he's supposed to be your ace.
You want to go?
No, nah,
I'm not gonna stop you. I'll go when you're done. Tell me when you're done.
Also, you know, damn, lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
I'll jump into it. Strasburg will make the rotation because ERA is still like respectable. It's under 4, which is cool. Let's be real. You're right. Hold on. You got Zimmerman. That's your best pitcher.
Zimmerman's your best pitcher, so he should be game one starter.
Pfister has been very impressive, and Roark has been really good. So that's three.
Let's be realistic when it comes
those
to Doug Pfister. Yeah. When it comes to Doug Pfister, outside of Clayton Kershaw, mm-hmm. there hasn't been ever since the end of May. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a better pitcher
in the National League.
Yeah, outside of Clayton Kershaw than Doug Pfister
in the National League.
Right, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not gonna argue. Roark's been really good too.
And Tanner Roark, he doesn't throw a lot of strikes, but he gets guys to ground out, yeah. Especially into those double plays. So there you go. So do you go with?
I know how we
Zimmerman. Yeah. Do you go Zimmerman, Pfister, Roark?
No, I wouldn't go Roark because he's still young, and you know, young pitchers. I don't care. In the playoffs it's still dangerous. It would definitely be Zimmerman would be my day one. I mean, my opening would be my first game one starter. I would go Strasburg too, because you still need, to be honest with you, in postseason, you always want a power arm. All right, you want a power arm in the postseason because if for some strange reason around that time they dominate in the postseason. I would definitely have Pfister in 3. It would be those 3. I would have Pfister in 3 because I feel like Pfister, if Strasburg screws up. Right, Zimmerman dominates. Strasburg screws up. You still have Zimmerman in game three Pfister in game three to be like, all right, to put you back in the series, to put you back where you need to be. Because I have faith in Zimmerman. Strasburg now, for instance, I'll give you a bad example. Zimmerman has a great game, and when you say Zimmerman was Pfister had a bad game, right? And he was the game two starter. He screws up. So now it's 1-1. Do you trust Strasburg in game three? I don't trust Strasburg in game 3.
Well,
so I'd rather have him game 2 because if I get the best of Steven Strasburg, we're up 2-0.
You know what I mean? Only way I start, well, if it's a home series,
yeah.
Then I start Strasburg
in game 2.
Game 2.
Okay, that makes sense.
If we're on the road, I don't start Strasburg in the first 2 games.
So you take him at 3.
I take him at 3.
I know, but I'll say we're not talking about Gio. There's a guy that I wouldn't even play.
I wouldn't play. Gio would be in the bullpen. He might be my stretch reliever.
Or if I have to, well, bullpen. Fourth. Yeah, Gio will be in my bullpen. If I need it, and if my arms were tired, something happened.
And I need to match up a lefty.
He would be, or even as a starter, Gio would be there if a terrible situation happened. Gio would start. Something had to be terrible, like an injury or something in the postseason. Something terrible would have to happen. But Gio would be in the bullpen for me. He'd be my long reliever in the bullpen. Like, that's what he would be. You know what I mean? So, Gio, to me, is totally showing you that he can't be trusted right now. Strasburg, again, leads the league in strikeouts. So, there's something he can do. He can say, okay, on my good day, I can dominate. Like, I can strike out the side. I can take over. When I'm at my best, when I'm at my peak, I'm still better than most. You know what I mean? He can say that. It's just we haven't seen Strasburg in that situation. He's consistently dominant. He'll have a bad inning, but then have like three great innings after that. Like, you know what I mean? Or he'll have that one bad inning and then dominate the rest of the game. And that one bad inning might be four or five runs. But after that, he's like mowing everybody down. This team needs to have Strasburg dominate from inning one to inning seven. You know what I mean? Or in inning six, to be honest with you. And then, you know, he gets your relievers in the seventh inning. But he has to be dominant for six innings strong. At least six innings strong. You know what I mean? Not giving you that big crooked letter in one inning.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Without Zimmerman in the lineup, this team has been average at best. You know, he's been out of the lineup. They made a trade for
Asdrubal Cabrera.
Thank you. I wasn't going to slaughter his first name.
I got you, dude.
Even though I've been listening to on the local Nets games, I still can't. I haven't been able to pick.
Dude, I knew this. I seen this dude in Cleveland. I know about this dude.
No, he's looked pretty good as a second baseman. But the only thing that I'm concerned with, Zimmerman's going to be back in a couple weeks. What are you going to do?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Offensively speaking, you have to put Zimmerman back in third and put Rendon.
Second. Yeah, because I was going to say you're not taking Rendon out of the lineup.
Hell no, and you're not, and you got to put Zimmerman's bat in.
You need Zimmerman's bat in the lineup.
But you're just going to have to find a way to give Cabrera some bats too, because he's a decent hitter. To be totally honest with you, so you're going to have to find a way to get him a bats too. But yeah, I mean, for this point in the season, yeah, Zimmerman has to play third. And then you work around that as the game goes on. And if you got a good lead, you take Zimmerman out. You put Cabrera at second and moves Rendon to third. And that way, you know, when the game, you know, at like the seventh, eighth inning, you know, if you're at a good lead, you don't have to play with Zimmerman.
But let me ask you an interesting question. All right, Zimmerman comes back in. You move him to because of Bryce Harper's struggles. Benching Bryce Harper, putting Zimmerman in left field?
No. Bryce Harper's still the future for this team. I know he's struggling. It's baseball. It happens. But he has to still play left. He has to learn that position because that's going to be his position, because Denard Span looks like an all-world center.
Denard Span is the team MVP at this point.
So, yeah, Denard Span has got that position on lock.
Even though it's interesting that Bryce said, I want to play center field.
Oh, it's done. That's done already. Yeah. It's done for the organization. He stopped that. I mean, Denard Span is a better outfielder. A leadoff hitter, he's great. He should be hitting 305 now. He should get a gold glove this season. Denard Span's fine. Bryce Harper needs to learn how to play left field and play at the best position and play at the best. And he still has to understand to be a better hitter and a better baseball player. No, Zimmerman should be playing third.
But Bryce used to be a catcher. Yeah. Would you put him behind the plate?
No, you got Wilson Ramos. Still a potential all-star catcher if he stays healthy. This team is stacked in that regard. I think they're overrated in terms of how stacked they are, but they are stacked at certain positions. So this team needs to, again, when Zimmerman gets back, play Zimmerman at third, Rendon at second, and it'll be fine. And again, when they get to the seventh, eighth inning, when they have a decent lead, move Cabrera at second and play Rendon at third. Or you can play Espinosa at second, whatever you want to do. But Espinosa shouldn't be – to me, Espinosa should only play in the ninth, because that means he gets no at-bats.
All right, you brought up an interesting point about the talent on this team offensively. You know, a lot of people are overhyping them.
Yeah.
Why did, and I don't want to go into this too long, but why does it kind of seems to me this lineup hasn't really meshed to really complement each other, you know, from a hitting perspective? Why do you think that?
Yeah. I think this team, for instance, they put Bryce Harper already at this pedestal, like he's going to be a 300 hitter. Like, it doesn't work that way in baseball. Like, he truly hasn't proved himself due to injuries and whatnot. Now, he had that good stretch when he had like 20 plus home runs, but as an average, he still hasn't shown you to be a 300 hitter or whatnot, and he's still learning to be a great hitter. So they put Bryce Harper on a different level. I still think Bryce Harper is going to be a great hitter eventually, but they put him on this level like he's supposed to be Mike Trout. He's not Mike Trout, so let's stop it right there. That's one. Ian Desmond, I think he's a good hitter, but Ian Desmond is streaky. You don't, he's not consistent enough. You know what I mean? He's a streaky hitter. When he's hot, he's great. When he's cold, he's terrible. You know what I mean? But he's a great defensive shortstop, has a pop, which is good. So again, you got Adam LaRoche, who had a great season last season. But is that the Adam LaRoche that we're going to definitely see every game? No, we're not. So I think they've overestimated what they did a couple years ago and thought like, okay, this team's going to always do this. If you look at these players, some of these players' resume, it's not going to be that way. Like Jason Worth isn't going to be as consistent as he was before. Like they're not that team. Now there are a bunch of good players. Don't get me wrong, you know, and they can still score runs, but not to the point that people think they're this prolific offense. When I look at that team, I don't see a dominant offensive player. Like on most of these teams, you see that these good teams with great offense, you see a dominant offensive player. Like you say, wow,
a guy in that four spot.
This dude is going to. He's a problem. Like he's a problem in this lineup. Like for the Braves, it's mm-hmm. like Freeman's a problem. I don't care if he's struggling, but Freeman's. And when you see Freeman, you're like, dang, how am I gonna get this dude out? Like he's an issue. You know what I mean? So the Nationals don't really have that guy, but they have a bunch of really good guys. Now, eventually you would hope that Bryce Harper becomes that person. I think he will. You know what I mean? People may think I hate on Bryce. Big Ron, you think I hated on Bryce Harper. I don't hate on him. I do acknowledge that he's going to be a good ball player. He's just not going to be that ball player. He's not that player now. So once that happens, when Bryce Harper comes, I'm going to use Bryce Harper. Once Bryce Harper and Rigdon, when those individuals become the players they're going to become, because they're going to become great players, that's when the offense is going to take it to the next level.
Okay. Let's go up 295. I know you hate when I say that. To Baltimore, let's talk about the Orioles. Last night, you dirty too for putting it like this. And I'm not going to read it like that. Last night, the Orioles beat the Yankees.
AL East third place Yankees.
Yeah, whatever. The Orioles have a 6-game lead over the Blue Jays and a 7-game lead over the Yankees. Machado got hurt last night. He hurt his left knee. Was it the surgically repaired?
No, it was the other knee. It
was the other knee. If he misses a lot of time, do you see that lead dwindling slowly?
First off, the injury right now is reported it's a sprain, and hopefully it's just that. They're going to bring somebody else to look at it again just to get another another opinion. Hopefully it's a sprain. If it's a sprain, probably out 3 to 6 weeks, which is cool. It's better than the whole season. We got to have this kid back. He's very important. I think we can hold the fort without him. We've done it before. I think we can hold the fort without him. That's not a problem. You just want him in the postseason because he makes this team a World Series contender. Without him, they're not a World Series contender. Now, with him, they're a World Series contender. This guy, again, he's probably defensively the best third baseman in the game. And also in terms of, you know, his offense was at that point in time was starting to be on a different level. We're looking, this guy was starting to
Did you see that play?
When he got Pujols out, arm is crazy. I'm gonna tell you a play. I'm gonna tell you a play that was amazing, and he didn't get the dude out. He was a fast dude. The dude that just played like there's no way he should have got the play. He circled the block, got the ball, picked the ball, threw this cannon to first. This dude was a speedster and made this joint close. I was like, yo, this dude's arm is crazy. Like Manny Machado again is one of the best third baseman in the game. But yeah, this team—if he's not there, this team is not a championship-contending team. They're a good team. May they prove me wrong, but he makes that lineup go, especially at the two spot when he's hitting, and also defensively, he makes the whole team better defensively. And that's when you know when the Orioles are just clicking on all cylinders like that. They're one of the best teams in baseball. See what they did after the All-Star break, and everybody talked about how their schedule was murderous, and they've been. Way above, I don't have the stats in front of me, they've been way above 500 and really have built their AL East lead since the All-Star break.
Yeah, speaking of the AL East lead, they're four back from the AL leading A's mm-hmm. in the loss column. Do you think they had the opportunity to catch them?
Well, they had Machado, I thought, you know, yeah, if Machado was healthy, definitely. But this team, again, is playing great baseball. Our team, I feel like, again, we don't need – I don't think we're going to catch the A's. Now it says Machado's out. We're going to catch the A's. But I wouldn't have a problem if we had Machado in the postseason and we play the A's and we find a way to play the A's, whatever a situation may – well, it would be the ALCS. So if we played the A's in the ALCS, I would be confident because I feel like we have the offense. Like, we don't have the A's pitching is good, but our pitching has been great, too, as well, after the All-Star break. The A's pitching is on a whole different level with the acquisition of Lester and, obviously, Samardzija, too, as well, with the Cubs. So they're going to be tough, at, you know, because they're pitching. But offensively, if we can put a four on the A's on any game, I feel like we can score easier against them than they can score against us. That's my comparison. Their pitching is great, though. Don't get me wrong. They could shut us out, but I feel like with our offense, we can score. We can score on many with the home run ball, and we have power from 1 to 9. And that's even without Matt Wieters, because Caleb Joseph has just been phenomenal. He had a streak, was hitting like five home runs in 5 straight games.
Yeah.
So this team has the potential to do some big things.
So it's interesting to see how this last weeks of October, September, and how August and into September and October plays out with just in this region.
Yeah,
DC Baltimore region, because you got two teams competing for a possibility of a World Series pennant. So,
and it's opportunity, we may see a Beltway World Series. It's a possibility.
It's definitely a possibility.
And you know, the Orioles have killed that series in early play. We've killed the Nats. We step on their throats, son.
I hear you, man. But I would
praise to Allah.
I definitely would like. I definitely would love to see the Orioles versus the Nats in the World Series. But, you know, that brings us to the end of another week.
Great week.
Another show.
Great show.
This show, if any of you who dropped off or just
tuned in,
we did this show in memory of a friend of ours, Ronald Watkins, who passed away.
It's Ronnie. Don't do Ronald. It's Ronnie.
Man, I'm using his government
name. No, Ronnie is a government. It's not Ronald.
Excuse me. Well, Ronnie
Watkins. I had to joan on him and call him Ronald. He didn't like that.
Yeah. Ronnie Watkins, who passed, had an untimely demise. He was a great guy. I've known the guy. I think I've actually known him a little bit longer than you guys, because we actually played AAU basketball together and played on a very dominant AAU team together. It was a dominant team. I'm not gonna lie. He was a great guy, great father, brother, son, great friend. Supported us. Unequivocally, always tuned into our show on Tuesdays, and even with text messages sometimes, oh, you guys should talk about this, talk about that. He supported us, called in on the multiple social media pages. So definitely want to tell you, we love you. You'll be forever missed, but luckily you have friends who won't let your memory die. And no one's truly dead if you find ways to keep their memory alive and always keep their spirit alive. So Ronnie, this show is for you. We miss you. We love you. And we'll see you when we get there.
Yes, sir. We'll see you, sir, on the other side, man. Best believe. It's not a done deal. We'll definitely see you on the other side, Mega. Again, man, we love you. The whole crew loves you. Everybody you've seen at your funeral, man, you're a love dude, man. I always say this, like, you know, obviously, I'm not going to be around when I pass away. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm not going to be around when I pass away. But just seeing that, that's what I hope for myself. Like, when God says it's my time to go, to be in that situation where so many people have so many nice things to say about me, and people just, you know, can be, if I'm blessed, and people just say so many nice things about me and the other things, and just to see how, you know, you've impacted so many people, you know, I'm like, wow, like, if I'm going, I want that same thing for myself, to see if I've impacted anybody's lives or whatnot. So, Ron, man, again, you're missed, you love, man. Thanks for listening. I'm going to have Ron sign us out, so y'all stay blessed.